8:30 a.m. KSDP. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for February the 6th, 2009. My guest this morning, joining me on the phone from Anchorage, is Professor Riviera. She's at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay, first of all?
I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me all right?
You're coming through loud and clear. Well, first, I wanted to have you on the program to talk to you about domestic violence because you were involved and associated with the UAA Justice Center. First of all, tell us a bit about the work that you do in conjunction with the UAA Justice Center.
Sure. Well, the Justice Center is an academic department at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and we're in the College of Health and Social Welfare. We offer our students a baccalaureate degree as well as a paralegal certificate. And in addition to providing our academic programs, we are an organized research unit, and we respond to various research requests from justice agencies across the state, as well as initiating some of our own projects. Here at the Justice Center, we also house the Statistical Analysis Center, which is funded by the Bureau of Justice Statistics through the United States Department of Justice. And this Statistical Analysis Center supports the Justice Center by serving as a clearinghouse for justice-related information and agency data and database management.
How long have you been associated with the Justice Center, and how long have you been a professor at the University of Alaska?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. Although I'm the newest faculty member in the Justice Center at UAA, I'm actually not new to Alaska. I have been with UAA and in the Justice Center since July 2007, and I was thrilled to return home after many years of completing my undergraduate work and graduate work and a doctorate degree, and then my first position as an assistant professor. So I was actually raised here in Anchorage, attended elementary and junior high and high school before I left for college. So I was out for 15 years and glad to be back and here in the Justice Center.
Did you do a couple of other things, or just were you working on your PhD?
I was mostly going to school. I went straight through my four-year undergraduate program to a master's degree in criminal justice, and then to a PhD program and completed that. And then I spent 6 years as an assistant professor at Southern Oregon University in Ashland, Oregon, before coming back up to Alaska.
Well, we want to focus on domestic violence data that's become available largely since 2004 when a joint study between the Justice Center and the Alaska State Troopers and the Alaska Department of Law has for the first time looked at reports of assaults and domestic violence incidents made to troopers for populations outside of Anchorage. As you study these results, what are you finding?
Well, one thing I want to point out, first of all, is that this analysis that we recently worked on is a descriptive analysis of, like you said, assaults and domestic violence incidents in Alaska. This report includes a number of characteristics, including information on the reports, the charges that were filed, the suspects, victims, witnesses that were present, as well as legal resolutions. Now, this extensive report has recently been published on the Justice Center website, which people could access through UAA and getting to the Justice Center. And before I talk about some of the important findings, I also want to clarify that this study did not include any reports of domestic violence to municipal police departments. So, for example, communities in the North Slope Borough are not represented. We have a large amount of data and many interesting findings, so I'll just share a few with you now. Most of the reports were made directly to Alaska State Troopers. Only about 20% of the reports were made to village public safety officers or village police officers. Also, when we look at the characteristics of the incidents, most of the assaults that we saw in our data were committed between intimate partners with a male suspect and a female victim who were living together at the time of the assault. Now, troopers were able to respond to these incidents fairly quickly, and we found that they interviewed victims and suspects, usually on the day that the report was made, which is pretty impressive considering, you know, the breadth of the state and the location of these various incidents and distance to be traveled. When we look at the incidents and the victims, the most common violent acts that we saw were pushing or shoving or grabbing the victim, punching the victim and slapping or hitting the victim. I bring that up as a contrast to the use of traditional weapons. We saw very few traditional weapons like knives or guns used in these reports, in the incidents that we had. We also did see relatively high rates of domestic violence cases being referred for prosecution and eventually resulting in conviction. And one surprise that we did see was we thought we would see a greater number of incidents involving stalking of the victim prior to the current assault or a sexual assault as part of the incident. So those were some of the surprises that we saw and some other major conclusions from the report.
What were you looking for as you were sifting through and studying these statistics that you were gathering?
Well, we're looking for a number of different things because this is the first statewide analysis of domestic violence in Alaska. We really just wanted to get an understanding, as I mentioned earlier, of what characteristics did the suspects have, the victims, the various incidents. We were trying to really understand and get a descriptive picture of this problem in Alaska. And of course, one of the goals that we have in studying and understanding these instances is to create policies and programs that hold offenders accountable and hopefully in the future reduce rates of assaults and domestic violence incidents across the state of Alaska.
Just curious, is the rate of domestic violence going up or down in Alaska?
Well, when we look at the data from this report, all of the data was collected from 2004. So we're not able to assess a trend in terms of a change from over time because we only did kind of a snapshot, and that's looking at 1 year. There are other nationwide statistics, and just recently I came across some information where there's some concerns that more calls are coming in to domestic violence centers, and some folks are suspecting that this may be related in some way to the economy.
Mm. Just so everyone is clear about exactly what we're talking about when we say domestic violence, could you give us your definition of domestic violence?
Well, yes, I'm really glad you asked that. We used the definitions that are provided here in the state of Alaska. Now, the statutes in Alaska are actually quite broad, and the definition of domestic violence is first based on the relationship between the victim and the suspect, and then it is based on the crime or crimes committed. So in other words, there could be a number of different activities that or offenses that fall under domestic violence. Now, this legal definition differs quite a bit from the general definition of domestic violence, whereas people tend to think of power and control and manipulation, coercion, et cetera. But we relied on the statutory definition. And in our study, we focused on assaults and domestic violence incidents. In other words, for these incidents to be included in our total study, there had to be an assault charge, either a felony or a misdemeanor assault charge. And so that makes this study possibly a little bit different than others that might use a broader term of domestic violence.
That's an interesting point. Are there a lot of situations and incidents that may be on the radar screen where there was no charge, but where the police decided, was just using their judgment and decided not to charge the alleged stalker or abuser?
Sure, that can certainly happen, and that's up to police discretion, and they use the information and the evidence available to them in making those decisions. One other possibly more important issue that is also important to law enforcement is the rate of underreporting of incidents like domestic violence. What we saw in our report, and we have seen in other places, for instance in Anchorage, we do see fairly high arrest rates in the case of this report, referral for prosecution, and eventually conviction. Mm. So when police are called, they show up, and where there's sufficient evidence, it seems very likely that this is going to result in prosecution and conviction. However, like I said, we're more concerned about the cases where people aren't reporting these incidents to law enforcement because then law enforcement don't know of them, aren't aware of them, and can't do anything to intervene or assist the victim, or to stop future incidents.
If you're just joining us here on Meet the People, 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint, also heard in King Cove, I'm talking with Professor Marnie Riviera. She is associated with the UAA Justice Center at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. Marnie, if you were to look at the statewide domestic violence statistics that you have been using for your research, would we notice that a large number of the offending population, maybe even the majority of the delinquent population, has a history of domestic violence?
Well, this is a really difficult question to answer. In one regard, we know, just as I said, that domestic violence is known to be an underreported offense. Now, the data in our study, in terms of looking at suspects having a history of domestic violence, one measure that we looked at was suspects who had an existing domestic violence protection order filed against them by the victim in the current case. And we found a surprisingly low percentage of cases. Only 1% of the suspects had such an order filed. Now, I don't think that this is a complete measure of the history of domestic violence for a suspect, because we don't know about all those incidents that did not get reported, or for some other reason, you know, there may have been a charge filed, but in this instance, there was no domestic violence protection order filed. So that's one issue. And you bring up the delinquent population. When we're talking about delinquents, we're talking about young people and juveniles. One of the things that we saw in this study was that, similar to data that's been reported out of Anchorage, there was a fairly substantial number of incidents that were witnessed by children. We found about 43% of incidents in this study were witnessed by children, and we do have concerns about that, because children who witness domestic violence are more likely to be victims of child abuse themselves and are more likely to grow up and be engaged in delinquency. Again, our study did not assess that specifically, because we were only looking at descriptive information on domestic violence assaults in 1 year, so we were not able to track trends, you know, regarding these children and their eventual behavior as juveniles.
Are the domestic violence trends in Bush, Alaska similar to those found in the data from Anchorage?
Well, we have to be very cautious when we make comparisons across different locations and different agencies for a number of reasons. There are many factors that can contribute to differences, including the referral process to the Department of Law or the municipality prosecutor's office, et cetera. What I can do is I can let you know some of the things that we found in our report that were similar to a report that was put out on domestic violence in Anchorage. And so some of the things that we saw that we might make some comparisons to would be the types of incidents. I mentioned this earlier, but these incidents that we saw are overwhelmingly domestic violence assaults between intimate partners, with a male suspect and a female victim. Like Anchorage, we saw fairly high rates of arrest for these offenses, and then in this study, referral for prosecution and conviction, as I've mentioned. Most of the domestic violence assault incidents that we studied were intra-racial, meaning they occur between a suspect and a victim of the same race, and that the victim's home is the most likely location of the assault. And again, these are trends that we see in other places as well, including Anchorage to some degree. And this is a really important question that you ask about, you know, some similarities between the Bush and Anchorage. Some of the differences and some of the things that we might want to study and be concerned about are the fact that the possibility of being more isolated in the Bush and possibly lacking a support network has been shown in other studies to make domestic violence more likely. And so this makes it even more of a priority for us to study. And, of course, one of the things that makes this a little bit different is that we do have the Department of Law data on the legal resolutions coming out of these cases.
Well, which brings me to my next question. Are there certain areas in Alaska that are reporting a very disproportionate number of domestic violence incidents and skewing your data?
Well, yes, there are some areas of Alaska, of the state, that had fairly high numbers of domestic violence incidents. The areas that we reported were high number of reports coming from Fairbanks, from Palmer, and from Soldotna.
Those were the worst, or?
Those are the areas of the state that have the largest number of reports of domestic violence assaults to the Alaska State Troopers.
Any idea of why they may have higher rates of domestic violence reports?
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that was my question. Why is this the case? Any idea?
One thing that we really have to keep in mind is population size. When we look at simple, straightforward numbers of crimes, numbers of offenses or reports to police, we can't make comparisons to places that have disparate populations. So in order for us to make a fair comparison and say, is this, you know, really larger number, or is it just simply a result of having more people in those places, we would have to compute the rate of domestic violence reports to the local population. Now, with nationwide crime data analyzed by the FBI as part of the Uniform Crime Reports, one of the ways that they are able to make comparisons is because the number of crimes in a location is divided by the size of that population and multiplied by a base rate of 100,000. This produces a crime rate per 100,000 people and allows for more fair comparisons across cities and states with differing populations. So in order for us to really understand if these areas have higher rates or just simply more people generating a larger number of reports, we would have to compute the domestic violence rate, taking the population into consideration.
Professor Rivera, when you look at the data from Bush and from the cities in Alaska, and you compare that to data gathered in the lower 48, what do you see? Are the number of domestic violence incidents similar, higher, or lower?
Well, we actually have not done analyses involving comparisons with specific data sets. So in some ways, we really couldn't answer that question about, specifically higher or lower rates here compared to other places. One of the things we can look at when we compare both Anchorage and rural Alaska to nationwide statistics is we do see higher rates of alcohol use by both suspects and victims who are involved in these domestic violence incidents. Another thing that we have looked at, and again, not analyzing the data in a comparative fashion, but just looking at the outcomes of some of that data, and I mentioned this earlier, is that in Anchorage we see a similarly high rate of children being present at these assaults. In about 43% of incidents, children were present during these domestic violence incidents. One of the things that we saw that might be a little bit lower than other locations is that we saw lower rates of domestic violence occurring following a relationship change. For instance, sometimes violence can increase when a victim decides to leave the relationship. And we did have a measure involving any kind of relationship change, and we saw in our data that there was a pretty low occurrence of the domestic violence taking place following a relationship change, such as the victim leaving. We also saw lower rates of the suspects having a prior history of assault, at least based on the domestic violence protection order data that I recently mentioned. So we certainly plan to make in the future more comparisons between data that we gather here from the Alaska State Troopers, making comparisons to Anchorage and to nationwide statistics. And those are projects for the future upcoming that we hope you will look for in future editions of our Alaska Justice Forum and as well in publications to our website.
Yeah, just two more questions. But before I get to those, I want to ask you, you said that you don't see a lot of people who had restraining orders against them because of a past domestic violence incident. Is that possibly an indication that some of the laws that have been passed by the legislature and are being, executed by the police are actually causing the reoccurrence of domestic violence situations to drop?
No, there's absolutely no way that we could draw that conclusion based on the data that we have.
All right.
One aspect of this data is we like I said, if these victims have filed domestic violence protection orders, then that's in the system. So that's one issue. I think what you're talking about is looking at mandatory arrest statutes and whether those are helping or hurting victims of domestic violence and whether they, in fact, are increasing prosecution rates. And the data from this study certainly cannot answer that question. We only have data from 2004, and we don't have data before this act was implemented in 1996. So we absolutely can't make a comparison between now and then and draw any conclusions about the effects of that statute or that change. Now, when we talk about mandatory arrest, this is a very interesting and somewhat controversial area. There are differing opinions as to the effectiveness of mandatory arrest statutes. And again, this is an area that's hotly debated and an area that you'll see more coverage on in the Alaska Justice Forum. We'll likely be presenting another article that looks at both perspectives, taking into consideration the perspective that this has been effective in achieving its goals and making victims safer, and on the other side, some concerns about why or where it's not achieving the intended goals.
All interesting. Any policy prescriptions that you think would improve the situation and lessen the number of domestic violence incidents that you could come up with based on the research that you've done since you joined the Justice Center in 2007?
Well, that's a really good question. That's the million-dollar question. If we knew what we could do to protect victims, all communities would be doing that. Before we can determine those proper policy implications, we need studies like this one that give us a sense of the problem, who's involved in the problem, where the problem takes place, and why the problem takes place. Some of the things that are advantageous is when we see troopers being able to show up quickly, getting information from victims. Victims are cooperating with troopers. We see high rates of arrest and referral for prosecution and conviction. This information, when victims are aware of it, indicates to them that the law is on their side, that if they do make a call for help, that somebody will show up, a response will occur, and there will be protection for them. So any policy changes that encourage that type of reporting and, you know, make arrests in cases where the evidence is there, any type of policy change in that direction is going to be beneficial to victims in the long term and hopefully reducing rates of domestic violence.
Well, Professor Riviere, I'd like to ask you more questions, but I'm about out of time. Perhaps when I'm more familiar with a wider body of the research and papers that you've written, I could have you back on the program and interview you again. But I really appreciate your willingness to come on the radio this morning and talk about your work.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for inviting me to your program.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All righty. Bye-bye.
That was Professor Marnie Riviere from UAA Justice Center in Anchorage, of course. She's talking about domestic violence, an interesting subject. Next Tuesday on Meet the People, I'm going to have Stacy Schubert. She is the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce president, and she'll be my guest on Tuesday. It'll be Meet the People at the regular time at 11 o'clock. We'll now go back to Science Friday, a program already in progress from NPR News in Washington, D.C.